Hey, what's up, guys? On this episode of Blood, Sweat, and Gear, Skip and I talk about a bunch of random stuff, including gynecomastia. Is it something that you need to have surgery to get removed? We talk about stiff leg deadlifts and how important they are to your training. Skip has an Orange Ruffy story, which you may or may not want to fast forward through. I don't know. And a guy who's getting test flu from like every form of test, but not from DECA, not from Tren. Just test. I don't know. We don't think it's test flu, but we'll get to that. And it's all going to happen right here on Blood, Sweat, and Gear. Welcome back to Blood, Sweat, and Gear with Skip Hill. I'm Scott McNally. This program is brought to you by TrueNutrition.com. You could use our code ADVICES for some additional savings on a lot of high quality supplements, tons of different proteins. You can even get Pepto Pro, which I like to use. Mix the unflavored Pepto Pro right into my intro workout carbs when I'm using those. Anyway, what's up, Skip? How you been, man?
Oh, I'm peachy. Yeah. Well, you know, we had the I know I'm not supposed to say it, but I don't care.
What's that?
I had the internet problems again.
You're not supposed to say that?
Well, I wasn't going to say it because the show will still come out at the same time. But the point is, for those who tune in and have been tuning in on Sunday nights live, you know, I feel pretty bad because it's been an issue a few times. And I think it's been rectified. Like I said, Sunday, it's nice to have, you know, my wife is the head nigger, or HNIC, head nigger in charge at the here where we live. So she has, you know, her contractors and contracts and stuff, so she can threaten them and basically say, you know what, there's a lot of problems here and I can basically cancel your contract. So they come running and they help out. This time it was actually part of the complex, which usually it's just me. So What it did was it forced them to look into the situation because they fixed the problem for the complex. And then I lit them up and said, I'm not good. It's dead from the wall. You need to walk down the hall. And they're like, well, it looks like there's nothing plugged in. It's just fucking walk down the hall.
Oh, plug it in so the mad. Wall. You were so mad.
Oh, shit, I was mad. So anyway, they did. And they were tripping over themselves, apologized, and they got it fixed. It's some kind of core issue. You know, you have all these modems in a room. There's two or three rooms. And they, when they went in to fix the problem for the property, they ended up messing up a couple of the wires. So anyway, I think it's done. I'm not sure.
I'm looking at our watch party. You know, here's the problem though. If you set this watch party up, I'm going to leave the watch party. If you set here's the problem though. The people who comment on the watch party, we can't see that. They have to go directly. So I'm going to tell you guys right now, if you want your comments to be on the show, you got to go directly to the show because people are talking and commenting on the watch parties, but we don't even see any of that. Anyway, Skip, you were so livid. I wished there was something I could do. I felt like I felt helpless. I was all the way over in this time. It was in Vancouver. And I was all set up, ready to go. And I felt helpless. I was like, I wish there was something I could do to help Skip calm down. It was bad.
Well, you know, if it happens once or twice, the problem is there's a buildup. And people don't know the backstory. You know, there's been ongoing issues here with the wife. And I continue to tell my wife there's going to be a problem. And one of these days I'm going to have a problem doing the podcast and I'm going to lose my shit. And then it happened. And then it happened again.
Yeah.
And then I hardwired into the wall and I've got all these, I got all this ridiculous speed, 800 upload, 800 download. And then we go to the next podcast and it happens 4 hours before the podcast is going to start.
Yeah.
So it's just so frustrating. And, you know, and I told you the same, I told you this and I'm going to repeat this. So everybody, I can't stand, listen, I don't, you know, we're not fighting for top spot with Joe Rogan's podcast. I get that. But you know what? I want to put out a quality product and I don't want to invest my time or you guys invest your time or the listeners invest their time for some shit that's half-ass and is unreliable and is not. And that's what I told the guy when he came. I said, listen, it's not that the speed and the quality isn't, it's that it's not reliable and I don't appreciate it because then I have to do it. I said, basically it's like this. I said, you go out to your truck in your driveway in the morning to go to work. Yeah. And every now and then it's not going to be there.
Or it's not going to start. How about that?
Yeah. So he's like, yeah, he's like, I totally understand, you know, and he got it fixed. And I said, I've heard that three times. So if you don't hear from me in 3 or 4 weeks, then great. He goes, no, I think it's good. So, and it's tough for my wife because I'm venting and, you know, we've been together for a long time. So she knows I'm not pissed at her, but she has to listen to it. And I'm sure that that's no fun either, especially because she's the one that can get it done. I can't call them, but she can because she's got the pull and she can tell them who she is and basically say, y'all got to get down here and fix it now.
All right.
So anyway, that's that.
Well, guys, welcome back to.
I'll be divorced in a year anyway. I already told you that. So that's other issues. Ooh. So I might go out tonight if I'm kind of the consolation because she's at her Christmas party. The anti-company, this anti-family company that she works for, where spouses and family, they're not invited to the Christmas party. No, they want everybody to get hammered with their coworkers and stuff like that and not allow family to come. So I get to go drop her off. So she wants me to pick her up and we might go out, but that's only if she doesn't go, you know, out anywhere else with her, the people she's working with. So I'm kind of on call. Yeah.
That sounds irritating.
You can sense a tinge of irritation and frustration.
A little bit, yeah.
What it is, you know, you're together for 30 years, but the last couple of years have been kind of rough. They've been a little rough. So anyway, this isn't a therapy session.
Do you feel like the move has, do you feel like that threw things off a little bit?
Well, considering I didn't initiate the move, she did with her job. I love Colorado and we get here and I love Florida. I think it's cool.
Yeah.
I'm not convinced she does, but it's not that. It's losing her mom. It's empty nesting and it's all coming down at once. The problem is you end up looking at each other going, pointing the finger. So I don't feel like I have anything to be too miserable. I love South Florida. Business is good. My training is going well, but she's got all these things on her plate, but it's not her issue. It's me. So anyway, I don't want to.
I figured like we were going down the road and I was like, well, I looked at the clock and I was like, well, we're like 10 minutes in. And I was like, my first initial thought is like, man, I should hustle this back to bodybuilding. Like, Scott, you got this, your job. You got to get this back to bodybuilding. And then I was like, wait, why? But why? Like you said,
hey, people, bodybuilders have relationships. You know what I mean? And here's the thing. Everybody who follows me has known me for a long time, knows that my marriage is pretty solid. Our relationship is good. The last couple of years, though, it's been really, really rough, man.
How long have you guys been together for?
30 years. Married for 28.
Dude, I got to tell you, man, and this is the honest to God truth is, you know, I've been in a few long-term relationships and I feel like I'm really good. You know, there's a pattern. And I think that it happens in relationships. There's a pattern where that you have the early excited, all head over heels for one another part of the honeymoon, the newlywed phase.
Sure.
And then that eventually fades and you have to evolve, you know, and change into something and grow together in different ways. And I feel like it's hard to get past that after that initial, like, oh my God, I can't keep my hands off of you phase is over. You know what I mean? It's hard.
I think it ebbs and flows. And I think it depends on the relationship. I do agree that as you go, people end up out of like long-term relationships won't make it if you can't grow, like there aren't parallels in some fashion because people tend to just naturally kind of gravitate, maybe not away from each other, but in different directions because of interests and things like that, career. But in our situation, there's always been parallels. There's always been things that we come back to that we do together, whether it be, you know, we ride motorcycles. We you know, we go to baseball games all the time. We do shit, you know, with the kids. But with the kids being gone right now, it's really fucking her up. And I'm going to tell you, and I posted about this on Facebook, and this is true. I did not know what the statistics were for long-term marriages when they empty nest. And the statistics of divorce are massive. Because what happens is you sit there and you don't have as much to do. You don't have as many obligations. You got all this money and you're like, I say all this money relative because you're not spending it on your fucking rotten ass kids.
Yeah.
So you're looking at each other going, well, basically like, what do we do now? So then it becomes nitpicking about all the little things that you haven't argued about for 20 years of raising kids. So it is a little different.
So that's like a common thing. That's like a common thing that happens. You're saying.
Very
because see, so I haven't been there, and I feel like a lot of our listeners haven't either. I look at our Instagram followers, you know, our followers that list that are, you know, that I follow on Instagram, our listeners that whatever, you know what I'm trying to say, the people who listen to the show that I'm following on Instagram, and they're like at the other end of that spectrum where they're like just having kids, I do know that we do have some older guys too that listen, but I feel like a lot of them are at that other end of the spectrum. So this is what they have to look forward to, is what you're saying.
I mean, everybody deals with it differently. I'm looking at empty nesting like, look, I've served my sentence and I'm being paroled. No, but I mean, it's a next phase thing. It's like, okay, this is the next phase. You just accept it for what it is. And she's struggling to do that. So really what it is that you throw that in there, then you throw in, you know, obviously her mom passing away. There's a lot of shit coming down there, but the lack of awareness has been real rough. So what it turns into, and I don't want to throw my wife under the bus. My wife is cool as fuck, but this is a really rough, rough time. So what happens is she makes it sound like she's dealing with all this shit and I'm just sitting over here not dealing with anything and life is grand, except I have to put up with her. Hmm. And that's rough because that's just not, that's not very fair. And it is, it's rough. Real, I laugh and say, I'm like, oh, I'll be divorced in a year. But I mean, there's a half truth to it. If things were to continue the way they're going then I don't know that that wouldn't happen. And that sounds kind of shitty. And I don't mean to, I can say that because she's not listening. She won't listen. She doesn't read my articles. She always says she does, but she doesn't. And that, you know, it's fine. She does her thing. She's got her career. I try to leave her alone there, even though I'm so close with living here and everything. But it's little things. I wanted help with a flyer yesterday. I don't know anything about Word. I don't know anything about Google Docs. I use Word, but I don't use it to put together pictures and shit like that. She has to do that on the daily. And she's got a guy, one of her assistants, who is really, really good. And it was an imposition. And of course, I get irritated about it. And I'm like, oh, this is fucking awesome. I guess I'm just bothering you. So it turns into that type of nitpicking. But let me just say this, though. The hands-off thing, the one thing that I will admit, even through 30 years, is, you know, and this isn't, it's funny how people are. People who, especially people who've been married for a long time, they think their wife or their husband is super hot to everybody. And it's funny to me because that's not the case. But to them, they are. And to me, my wife is super fucking hot. So I haven't really lost that.
That's cool.
You know, she can even gain weight and not be in the gym. I don't like it. I want her to be in the gym and I want her to be in shape because that affects your personality, sex drive, everything, your mood, your sleep. But she's still cool as fucking to me. She's hot. But I don't, I'm always careful to not post, you know, about how hot my wife is, because I know when I read other people say it, you know, you go, yeah, no, she's not. Yeah, no, she's not. But, you know, it's obviously complimentary when people, I understand why they do it, but a lot of people think that it's the old guy thing where the old guy who trains thinks he's fucking hot to like 25-year-olds. Like, no, you're basically hot to a middle-aged 49-year-old who's desperate. That's just about it. So I try to keep it in perspective, I guess is what I'm saying.
That's funny. I would love to keep going on this road, but as your friend, I don't want to keep like turning the screws.
No,
you know what I mean?
No. 2 hours of talking about bodybuilding and stuff would be a welcome. Yeah.
All right. In that case, let's do this. Hey, guys, welcome back to Blood, Sweat, and Gear. I'm Scott McNally, and with me, as always, is Skip Hill. What's up, man? I got to tell you out the gate, have you ever dealt with TMJ? Because that's what I'm going through today. And, dude, it screws up your ability to even, like, get your food in.
Yeah, I haven't. I've heard of people dealing with it, but I haven't.
It's no joke, man. It's no joke, dude. Like, seriously, I go to eat food and I can move my jaw up and down, but I feel like it goes side to side in any way. And I don't know what it is. I'd been traveling a lot, sleeping in, you know, various hotel beds and stuff like that. I think that it was something in my sleep, something in my neck. I was hoping you had an answer like, oh, yeah, I've dealt with that. And all you got to do is this simple trick. You know,
well,
this-
you're talking about the actual pain, nerve pain. You're not talking about like pumped jaw muscles, right?
No, I'm talking about like the jaw hurts. You know, I'm getting like it almost feels like it's out of track or something.
Yeah,
like
exactly. No, I haven't. I've dealt with over time the, you know, the pumped jaw muscles where you have to stop chewing, just let your jaw hang down. Like, it's like, oh my God. Like, you can't chew cereal that has like dates and dried dates and raisins in it because you're like, this is too much. Yeah, you just want like somebody, you're like somebody else, like just chew my food for me and just spit it in my mouth and I'll swallow it.
Oh God.
Be my bird mom. Be my bird mom.
Hey, I did have a question. I'll just turn to it right into the gate here. This is something that somebody had posted. I asked Dave Crossland about it on drugs and stuff. I wanted to get your perspective since, you know, Dave coaches people, but the coaching he does is more a lot of like off-season mask plans. He doesn't do a ton of contest preps. I would love to get your perspective on Gino. So the guy's question, and I want to take it a little further. The question itself was, once you get Gino, is there any way to get rid of it other than surgery? A. But then B, where I want to steer the question is, you know, let's talk a little bit more about it, because there's a lot of things we can go into. How many people in bodybuilding have Gino, and how much of a detriment is it when you compete? So this, to start out, is there a way to reverse it?
And again, I'm going to put this disclaimer out. This is just my opinion. And I obviously I've seen a lot of shit over 30 years, but I would say that you're looking at a very, very small percentage, almost the exception to the rule. It, 99% of the time, if you have any significant gyno, you're going to have surgery to get rid of it. There are times where I've seen people with mild gyno that if they go on strong AIs, they can, it's, I hate to use the word reverse, but that's how everybody refers to it. Yeah. It can lessen it to a certain degree. But here's the thing. I even sometimes in situations like that think that it probably wasn't even gyno as much as, because when you're dealing with estrogen and the size of the gland increasing and things like that, I just think that some people make the mistake of thinking that fatty tissue or their gland, because see, people need to understand that the gland will increase as you gain body fat too. And everybody likes to say, well, it's bigger and I know it's gyno. And I just think sometimes people don't they find it difficult to differentiate between whether their titties are getting softer or their nipples are getting softer versus true gyno, like softer from gaining body fat.
Yeah.
And there is a difference because my gland will be bigger when I'm heavier and I can feel it. And then when I get lean, it may be the exact same anti-estrogen dosing compound, things like that, but I just get leaner and it just gets smaller and smaller. Now I've never dealt with gyno. Now, so it isn't when I say I never did. I did for like 3 days once. And it was funny because I knew exactly what it was. This is what I tell people. If you're not sure if you have gyno, you probably don't. There because it fucking hurts, man. It's like, well, sometimes like, you know, my nipples would get sensitive. It's like, if you just don't want your shirt to touch your nipple because it hurts, that's a sign that you might have gyno. Not, yeah. Oh, if it brushes up against it, or if my boyfriend sucks on it too hard, smacks it with his cock, then sometimes it gets sensitive. No, that's just you being aroused. there's a difference. So I just think, and as far as aesthetics, I mean, I think it's so easy to fix these days that I don't understand. When I see someone at the national level with gyno,
I see
a broke motherfucker. And I'm not trying to sound like an insensitive prick. All I'm saying is, you know what? Maybe you're feeding four kids and I mean, there are reasons that people are broke. I get that. But what I'm saying is, that's typically the reason they don't have the money, because it's so easy and there's so many good doctors that can fix it. And then you never have an issue with it again. Yeah. And I say never. I've heard of people saying that they had gyno surgery, they had the gland out, and then they end up that they get gyno again.
They didn't get all the gland removed. That's apparently what's happened.
Because if the gland is out, you're not going to have gyno issues in the future. That's just silly. You can still get fat and carry body fat in that area.
Now, let me ask you this. Do you think that gyno, and of course, when we say gyno, it is going to depend on what it looks like, right? Because you could say gyno and it'd be like, yeah, if he turns to profile, I can kind of see that his pec isn't totally, you know, rounded at the bottom. I see just there's a little bit of deviation in there. There's that gyno. And then there's like, holy shit, that person needs a bra. You know,
yeah.
So there is differences when we say, you know, if that guy has gyno. But do you think that a guy could have a substantial amount of gyno and still be successful in bodybuilding?
He shouldn't. He shouldn't because it's not aesthetically pleasing. But I've seen it happen.
That's where I was getting.
If you just have, here's what happens. Typically, it's not at the national level, because what has to happen is your physique has to be so much better than everybody else's for the judges to go fuck it. I mean, there are judges who have flat out said, and I'm not going to get into what state because I don't want to be a dick about it and cause any type of problem, but one of the three states that I've lived in, where there have been arguments about, you know, with the judging panel saying, if you hand down the winner, you know, so-and-so is the winner of the overall, I'm going to call the second person because his acne is too bad on his back. And quite frankly, I'm against all that type of shit. And I didn't think it was that bad.
Yeah.
But ended up not calling him for the overall, even though it was handed down by the rest of the panel. So aesthetically, those things need to be taken into consideration because, of course, it's part of the total package. You know, I've always said, if you do a hand or ab thigh and you have titties, then you probably, in my opinion, you just shouldn't compete until it's taken care of. If you get a win, good for you. But trust me. No one or very few people are looking at your overall physique. They're staring at your titties.
And that's if it's bad. That's if you have like legit gyno.
If it's minor, I don't care about minor. I mean, I think it's almost accepted in the sense that it's sometimes just part of the game. But when I say minor, I'm saying minor, like if you're not drawn to it.
Yeah.
Then I think it's not going to impact the overall total pack. I mean, you know, I think a lot of people don't understand how judging is. Well, you know, he's got better pecs, and then he's got like the judges look at chest, then we go shoulders, then we go, oh, who's got better arms? That's not how it works, people. You just look, boom, total package. It's what is pleasing to you based on the experience and the knowledge that you have and the tens or hundreds of thousands of physiques that you've seen over the years. You just know. A lot of times, judging panels will have their top five before a mandatory has ever even been hit. You're going to see you're going to start jotting your top five down from the, from the first quarter turn.
Yeah. I've heard you say that. And I've heard others say that too.
Yeah. From there, you may change it. And people say, well, why? Why did he win over this? His glutes are better. His this and that. It's just an overall completely subjective type of, everybody sees a little bit of a different thing, but it's what is pleasing to the eye. That's where, well, he was more shredded. Well, those things come into play when you have people who are basically neck and neck. Mm. There's not much splitting the two or the three or the five physiques. Then those things come into play so much more. But typically it's the first 3 seconds. It's the first 5 seconds. It's what is pleasing to the eye.
Yeah.
And gyno, bad gyno is not pleasing to the eye.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I forgot what I was going to say. You completely, like, I was listening to you and I got like so engrossed that I totally forgot where I was going to go with that. But I was still on the whole gyno thing.
And I like titties. I'm all about titties. I'm all about big titties on women.
So it can't be reversed. You know what Dave Crossland had said, though? He had said that he thought, and I think I agree with him, that you could get swelling, you know, like early gyno, you may get swelling of the gland, more fluid inflammation. And I think that if you catch it in those early stages, that you could turn it around. Like, you're not going to grow terrible gyno overnight. Like, you're not going to just wake up and have it, right?
Yeah, you know? I would agree with that. The other thing that people need to note too is, because I've heard this before, well, you know, I can get fluid out of my nipple, so that doesn't have anything. I've seen dudes with paper thin skin and absolutely zero gyno milk that thing like a fucking udder.
You mean actual like liquid? Like,
yeah, like liquid.
Okay, when I meant fluid as in like holding more fluid in that area.
Okay,
but you're talking about.
I was just making the point that I've been told, like, well, like they're questioning me, they're telling me they have gyno, or I think I have gyno, and then they go on to tell me how they can get, you know, well, when I squeeze my nipple, fluid comes out. That isn't directly related to whether you have gyno or not.
True. And I remember what I was going to say. It was that you had said, if it stands out, you know, you're the judge, you're looking at someone, it's going to be a problem if it stands out. I think that's where the head trip is for everybody. Because you're looking at your own physique and you look in the mirror and you don't really see yourself for what you really are. I don't know if I still do. I went through customs today. I don't see myself as a big guy by any means. And the first thing the guy says, like, I'm not even stopped yet. I'm wearing a hoodie and I'm pulling up and I have my passport in my hand. And before I even stop, the guy says, so do you own a gym or do you just go to one?
Oh, yeah.
Like, it just, I mean, I take that as a compliment, but it was like,
sure.
It reminds me, though, like, I don't have a very good perspective of what I look like because mm-hmm. I see everybody else walking around the grocery store and I'm like, yeah, you know, I look like any of these other guys. But apparently, you know, obviously I have more muscle than I recognize. All that said, I feel like you could definitely have that same issue with gyno because I've had people, clients of mine who will say like, hey, man, you know, I really want to up my game this next year, you know, and I really want to make sure that I overturn every stone there is. Should I get rid of my gyno? Should I have that? Should I look into that? And I know a couple of them are listening right now to this. And I've looked at them. I've been like, I can't even really see anything. You know, I can't even really see it. So it's like trying to find it a subjective, be subjective with yourself, man. It's difficult because we look at that and we either see something that's terrible, 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 or maybe we don't see it at all. I don't know. One of the two.
Right. Right. And I think in a situation where a physique is really good, yeah. I think they just people kind of hope they know it's there, but they're almost kind of hoping that their physique is good enough that no one's going to notice.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
on the, you know, most of us tend to focus on our flaws and our weaknesses, yeah. the large majority of us. At the same time, there are still people who have those flaws that they have almost trained themselves psychologically to overlook them because they're. How do I say they have such a negative impact on that person that they just overlook them because they just feel like they're negative all the time. And part of that is accepting. It's not necessarily a bad thing until you're not being realistic with how you look. The best way, I think the best way to do something like that, and I've said this before, if you ever want to prove to someone that they're fat, yeah. is take a picture from them, like from behind, and post it on Facebook or chop their head off, take it from behind because their first instinct will be, man, that motherfucker's fat. Oh shit. That's me.
It's me.
Yeah. The point being is when you see yourself in pictures or in video before your mind can put together that it's you, you've already made up your mind on what that person looks like.
Yeah.
So it's funny how sometimes that can happen. I've heard of, you know, seasoned bodybuilders. I remember Hans Vandergrond and tell me one time, and this is years ago, you know, Hans from, he went to junior nationals or junior SAs back in like the late 80s, early 90s. And he said that he came off stage. Everybody was telling him how good he was. And he looked up on the video screen and saw himself. He's like, and he said, he goes, Ken, he goes, I thought, cause you know, back then I was still Ken. I was still a teenager. So, but he said to me, he goes, Ken, he goes, I was looking at this guy on the fucking video and he's like, this motherfucker's bad. He's going to crush some shit. And he goes, Ken, that was me. That was me on the fucking video screen.
That's so great, man.
It's just sometimes seeing, and of course, back then, you know, we didn't see ourselves. We saw ourselves rarely in video. Right. I mean, I don't know if you remember, but you used to take like a beta or do a video camera and you see yourself like, oh man, I'm hitting some poses. I'm fucking killing it. Yeah. Well, because you never see yourself, so you're impressed with yourself briefly. Now you see yourself every fucking day, three times a day on Instagram.
Right.
And you're reminded by the other 100,000 people that you're really not that good.
Hey, I remember my first show, I was using a VHS camera. It was actually, I think, like a different type of tape, but it was a camcorder to practice my posing. I would hit record on a tripod and then run over, hit my poses. And then run back over, take the thing off the tripod, hit rewind, hit play, watch it and be like, okay, I want to lift my arms a little higher next time. Okay, hit rewind, hit stop, put it back on, hit record, run back over, try it again. Yeah, you know, that was back in the day now.
Oh, yeah. I had a stockpile of video cassettes from bodybuilding shows and everything else and our wedding. And I threw them out.
Oh shit. You didn't even like transfer them the wedding? You didn't transfer the wedding?
They were in a box when we had moved to Colorado and they were in a box with my wife's wedding dress. And I always question, I'm like, why do you keep your wedding dress? Not, you know, mad, but I'm like, why would you keep your wedding dress? And she's like, well, cause it's, you know, important to me. It's sentiment. Well, then it came up missing. It was in that box. And for the last fucking 20 of our 30 years, probably, she has accused me of purposely throwing that box out. And I told her, I said, because the wedding tape was in there too, but so were all of my bodybuilding tapes as
you
well.
Done that.
And I'm like, I would have thrown your wedding dress out and maybe the wedding tape, but not my bodybuilding tapes. Are you fucking crazy? Yeah. And I did not throw it away on purpose. I don't even know how. You know, you clean out shit when you move sometimes and you just don't know. You think you know what's in that box and you toss it and you're just fucked forever.
Yeah. Yeah. Ugh. No, I've done that, man. I've wondered like where a lot of shit is that I, you know, and the older you get, the more shit that you don't have that you used to have. That's what I found.
Yeah, we downsized. Moving from Colorado, we had almost 4,000 square feet, and then to move down here, we got rid of.
Yeah.
We got rid of damn everything. And I'll tell you, when you're older, I won't get off on a tangent here, but it's a little depressing because then when you think things aren't supposed to matter that much, but you accumulate things over time and you accumulate nice things sometimes. Yeah. And then when you don't have them and you're older, you almost feel like, what do I have?
Yeah.
You know, a little bit.
All you have are the memories.
Hey guys, why are you using sports nutrition that was designed for someone else? At TrueNutrition.com, they offer the world's largest selection of quality protein powders, and they let you design your own custom blend from a variety of powders, flavors, boosts, and packaging options, like the Team Skip blend, for instance. That's over 20 billion possible combinations to create a protein powder tailored to your diet, your goals, your tastes, and your budget. TrueNutrition.com also offers the ability to create delicious custom oatmeal blends. And they're third-party tested, proving that all their supplements are ensured to have the highest level of quality and value. Don't be a sucker and pay for fancy packaging and gimmicks. Discover the source that bodybuilders trust and stop using mass-produced nutrition that wasn't designed for you. TrueNutrition.com. And use our code ADVICES at checkout to let them know that you support the shows.
What about subcutaneous injections for TRT? This guy is, he ran a cycle in the past. I think it was years ago. And at the time he was doing like 2 cc's of prop or something like that. Each shot every other day. So obviously a half a cc of sip is not going to be a big deal comparatively, but he's getting pain. He's rotating glutes and that's it. And he said he's dealing with, a lot of discomfort. He feels like it probably is just, you know, because he's dealing with virgin muscle again, basically. But what do you think about the idea of going sub Q? I know it can be done. I know Dr. Chrysler, who was from Michigan, was the guy who really pioneered it. And then in TRT, I know that someone posted that Gorilla Chemist was recently talking about it. And they posted a study that was done. But what, you know, just real world thought. Have you given it a try ever, Skip?
Yeah. I think it's easier when you're TRT because it's a sub-Q shot versus, even though it might be daily, I think it's better to do low volume because a higher volume, it's obviously, it can irritate the skin. The oil will still sit there. It takes longer to dissipate. So you have to put it in different areas, but they have shown that if the volume is too high, that it can actually thicken the skin and add or make it appear to add fat in that area. And it isn't something that dissipates in like a week or two. And here's another example. I've got a friend, he moved recently, but the first couple of years, you know, I've been down here for 2 years. I trained at Titan Gym and one of the guys there, super cool guy. He has to take a lot of injections because, and I didn't mention his name, correct?
Incorrect.
Okay.
Super he's cool guy though. So that does narrow it down.
Yeah, he was HIV positive since like the late 80s.
Oh, shit.
So he's got to take a lot of injections. He takes antibiotics.
S2H? TRT.
Yeah. No, well, S2H too, but not in this particular situation. No. Anyway, so he has to take a lot. And what he showed me, and he said, he's like, you know, Skip, I don't know what to do about this. And he had really, really thick skin all around his belly button from the subcutaneous injection. I'm like, yeah, the volume is just too high. You actually are causing. And he said, he goes, I haven't put anything in there for a year. And I'm thinking, oh my God. Holy but shit. Because he had done that for so long that it, you know, had irritated and had built up. Look, somebody told me, and I don't want to be held to this. Someone told me that it actually can increase the fat in that area. Now, I don't know if that is true or not. To me, it seems more likely that it's just kind of the oil that doesn't dissipate because it didn't really get sub-Q. It was like in the fatty tissue and it takes longer to dissipate. I don't know for sure, but I know what I saw. And I know that I had had that in a minor, much, much more less significant issue when I did it myself.
Yeah.
So I always encourage people, if they're going to do it, to do it either daily or every other day with an insulin pen, make sure you get sub-Q. That means if you are not very lean, you got to make sure it gets to the subcutaneous, which is the layer between the muscle and the fat, not the fat.
How do you do that then? How do you make sure you get to that?
Well, you just, the most important thing is you pull it away from the muscle for starters to create that space. But it's you, when you feel it afterwards, if it feels, I don't want to say like a bolus, but if it feels like a knot,
yeah,
it didn't make it because
you got to get past that. You're saying,
yeah, you got to get past that. So, you know, most people, if you're not lean enough to use a half inch insulin needle and get sub Q, your ass needs to get leaner, because I've used 5/16 and I understand that I'm, you know, a little bit leaner than most, but I've used 5/16 for a very long time because it's a finer needle and because it's smaller, because the less damage that I'm going to do to tissue over the last 30 years is probably going to be a better idea in the long run. But as far as blood levels too, I have seen, and I think Dante backed this up, if I'm not mistaken, if you do 200 milligram, and I'm using arbitrary numbers here just to make the point, 200 milligram IM injection of testosterone cypionate versus 200 milligram injections split up every day over 7 days subcutaneous, the sub-Q dose will maintain slightly higher blood levels of testosterone than the injections.
I could see that, because you're not going to have as much blood flow to carry it away and break it down. You know, that would be my guess, at least, just a bro guess.
Well, I mean, if it's a blood level, it's systemic. I mean, because it wouldn't.
What I mean is that if you were to take an injection in the muscle, I feel like it could get spread around and carried away and broken down faster. There'd be, you know what I mean? Versus if it goes to an area where there isn't much blood flow, then it could just kind of sit there. I'm not sure what the reason is. That would be my guess, at least. Because it is, you know, anytime you do go like sub-Q, it is going to be a slower release than an IM, you know? Just like IM would be slower than going IV, you know, for anything.
Right.
Versus, and then, you know, IV, your blood levels will crash a lot faster than it will IM. And I, you know, and I'm thinking of like, you know, you can see that with growth hormone. You know, IV growth hormone spikes it up really high and then drops it down. So then from there, you know, IM is a little, you know, it just has, it has a slightly less of a peak, but then longer duration. And then from what I've heard, at least sub-Q is even a longer duration, but with less of a peak even further.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah, I don't know though. I know Carl Lenore was really big into that, but I know for a lot of us gear users, I mean, I work with a guy who, just on a whim, he had no reason to, he just tried this. And I feel like you got to watch it, man. When you're doing, like you said, because the key is like small injections. If you're thinking like, well, I'm doing 2 cc's every day or whatever, you know, and I'm going to get away with just doing one shot, you know, I'll start doing my shots sub Q because I have all this area to work with. You're going to fuck yourself up really quick.
Yeah, it's a horrible idea. And anybody who's had what I call seepers, where you go IM, but then it ends up seeping out of the muscle. It's funny because, let me explain this a little bit better for those who might, somebody will understand what I'm saying. Well, I'm sure they understand the seeper point, but you know, you do an inject IM and then you always, you know, press to hold. Oh, well, when it stops, it's not bleeding. So I'm not going to apply pressure. You're applying pressure for two reasons. Only one of them is so you don't bleed out. Yeah. Okay. What you're doing is you're allowing that hole in the muscle to close.
Yeah.
So that the oil doesn't leak out and end up between it, basically in the subcutaneous layer. And it's funny because I've had some bad ones, right? I don't know if you've had this with clients, but myself and I've had clients over the years who are more prone to this. When you get really, really lean and I get to like the last couple weeks before a show, I have to be very careful where I'm putting shit because they seep like crazy.
Oh yeah.
So then you end up with all this thick ass skin from, like, you put it in your delt, and from your delt down to your elbow, your skin all of a sudden is a half inch thick. I mean, you know, and it doesn't help with conditioning, and especially when it's only on one side.
Yeah. Yeah, no.
You got to be very careful with that. So the pressure after an inject is important, not only to stop the bleeding on the surface of the skin, but to keep the goddamn oil from coming back out of your skin as well.
This is true.
I'm sorry, not out of the skin, out of the muscle.
By the way, so what you did, Skip, was you started a watch party at the Advices Radio Group.
Oh, well, see, I'm a pro. I'm like a pro at this. So I have it on my page.
There you go. Maybe you started a watch party at other groups too.
On my page, yeah.
Okay.
I'm watching it right now.
Well, guys, if we started a watch party at your group and we weren't invited to, we apologize. We apologize on both of our behalfs.
I'm an amateur at this. It's like I want to know what I'm doing, but I don't. How many episodes have we've only done a couple hundred episodes? I mean, eventually I'm gonna get this right. I'm gonna get the internet connection right.
Yeah.
I'm gonna get the watch party right. And about the time I get it right, there'll be some other fucking social media thing that I'll.
You're gonna move. You're gonna need new internet, and Facebook will be ancient by then. It will be something. Right. We'll be on something else. A little update here, and I mentioned this to you before this show. So we were talking previous episode about sublingual melanotin 2. We segued into nasal melanotin 2. Uh-huh. And I guess so, you know, we saw it at research sites that nasal melanotin 2 is a thing, and a little bit more feedback on that. I guess people who get the nausea feeling don't get it from that stuff. So there could possibly be a benefit. Not only do you not have to inject it, but you can also avoid the nausea. I don't know why, but that's what I had several people tell me that now.
Yeah, I know we talked about that, you know, briefly when we were attempting to record the show on Sunday.
That's why I said, but not before this show.
Yeah, not before the show. And you know, I thought about that more because it's been kind of weighing on my brain, because I'm thinking to myself, how is it that the process, you know, would be any different? And I don't think it is. This is my best guess. And again, it's a bro guess, and I'm putting that disclaimer on it from the start. I think that you're getting just less drug.
I bet you're right, man. I bet you're totally right.
That's what it is. And you know, it does come back to what I have said a million times over. And I get more hits on my melanotan chapter of the TRT video, or the TRT DVD, than any other chapter on it. I get people hitting me up, random emails going, hey, I'm going to Acapulco. You know, I'm 23, this, that, and I'm going with my friends. And this is what I was going to do. What do you think? And I'm like, it's just a bad idea, because the information out there is 10 times over what you need as far as dosing. So what it does do, what the nasal might do too, is it may keep that dosing lower because it just doesn't need to be that high. Let me tell you something. I noticed when I took, I was in Michigan this last time. I was there for almost 2 weeks because of my wife's mom passing in late September. I only tanned twice, and I didn't take my melanotan for almost two weeks. And I had this bizarre thing where I got fucking darker. So I started paying attention to, and I'm like, you know what? And I don't take a lot.
Yeah.
But I cut my tanning back to only twice a week, and I only take it 3 times a week, and I'm darker. Now, I haven't tanned or taken anything in like a little over a week. But the point being is, it's almost like even my very, very low dosing is still higher than it needs to be, because probably I've taken it for so long. There's that too.
Yeah.
But it just comes back to the fact that a lot of this stuff, you know, as bodybuilders, we just, you know, when in doubt, take more protein. When in doubt, train more, do more sets. When in doubt, you know, eat more carbs. Get more sleep, everything. And it's the same thing with the melanotan. I just really do think that a lot of times is we just fucking overkill everything. Yeah. And we're so not patient. We have to front load everything. Same with the melanotan. Well, should I take a milligram? Yeah, if you want to puke all over yourself. I mean, I guess go ahead, or feel like complete ass.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just horrible. So low dose. And I think that's probably what's happening with the nasal. You're just not getting as much, which would make sense.
Okay. Let's see here. We had a few more things. Do you have any regrets? That's Jeff Nestor.
Regrets?
Regrets.
He's not going to spell it right. I know that. That's an inside joke for him. And I mean, obviously it's not an inside joke because it's, you know, Meet the Millers, but which is one of the funniest.
The kid with the tattoo or something like that? Is that?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I know. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. He laughs. He's got the mullet. Anyway.
It's a great tattoo.
Yeah. It's a great movie. Holy shit. That movie's funny.
Dude, I never watched those movies, and I don't watch those kind of movies, like the campy, funny family type stuff. But I loved it. I watched it for some reason. I saw it and it was really good. It was entertaining.
Yeah, it's funny you say that because I'm not a huge fan of that either. And there were some cheesy parts. I mean, you know, when she's dancing, I'm like, come on. I mean, this is so filtered and you're 50 years old. You're still pretty hot for a 50-year-old, but you're still, what's her name? I forget her name.
You're asking the wrong person
it's
to tell you.
It's not Courtney Cox, but it's the other girl from Friends. Anyway, that's terrible. I don't know, but
J-Lo? She's blonde. I don't know. I don't know any of those names.
It's funny. The guy in there from Saturday Night Live. He's one of my favorites. He was on Eastbound and Down. And I just loved Eastbound and Down with Kenny Powers, too. I like quirky shit. And I'm telling you, that fucking movie was just funny, just flat out funny. And here's a job. I'm going to make this note, too. Not a fan. Well, let me say this. I'm watching Schitt's Creek, and I didn't think I'd like it because there's a couple actors in there I am not fond of. It's very, very subtle humor, and it took like a season to get into it. But I'm telling you, it is the funniest, quirkiest, very subtle humored series I've seen in a long time, and it's good. The American Pie dad is in it with the fucking big old eyebrows, and I can't stand him. The dude from the newspaper guy, he's the blonde-headed mullet guy who used to have the paper route sitcom about 20 years ago. I cannot stand him. He always makes silly voices and everything, and I can't stand
him. Yeah, I know who you're talking about. I like him. Chris Elliott?
Chris Elliott.
He's a weird dude. He's
stand him.
He's a weird dude. He's like off the wall.
He's Adam Sandler-esque to me, and I don't like Adam Sandler. Sandler is it? Don't you? With his little voices and the things he does when he talks, it drives me.
That I can kind of see that, but I've also seen him in some like really weird shit that's just like strange. Like that Paperboy TV show was just strange as fuck, you know?
Yeah, it was fucking weird.
Nobody knows what we're talking about right now, by the way.
I don't think so. Everybody's like, I'm not that old. I'm only 30. But if Adam Sandler is in something that's serious, I actually think that he's cool. But when he gets silly with his little voices, it drives me fucking nuts. I can't deal. And everybody's got their shit. Everybody's got their preferences. I don't like it. But I'm telling you, this show is funny if you can put in the first season, because you have to get to it to see what they're actually how they're building and how they're building the characters, and it's
they got you hooked now, huh?
It is. It's pretty funny. I only have one season left, but it's pretty damn funny.
What about this one here? So this guy has a Cybex Smith machine, and he explained to me what this is. He said he's considering replacing it with a Jones machine. He said it looks like it offers more mobility than the standard Smith to avoid long-term pattern wear from always pushing from the same planes of motion. So what that machine is, have you seen the Smith machine that, yes, it's on a track this way, but it's also on a track this way? It's on like two tracks. Okay. What do you think of those?
I'm not a fan at all.
Yeah.
No, and I've used it for rows and stuff like that. So for something like rows where you kind of want to pull back a little bit. It's not that it's bad. My whole thing is, to me, it just defeats the whole point of a Smith machine. I mean, if the only thing you cannot do is move it this way, you can move it forward and back and you can move it up and down, then use a fucking free bar, save $2,000 or $3,000 and don't even use it. All it does is it keeps you from twisting. That's really the only thing that it does. I personally am just not a big fan of it. I said outside of barbell rowing, and I like to do barbell rows on a fixed normal Smith machine that has about a 15 degree angle. If he's talking about a Cybex machine, that's straight up and down anyway. Those old Cybex Smith machines didn't have an angle to them.
Okay.
You have to get a Bodymaster or something else that has an angle to it.
Did you say you like the angle?
I do. I don't like the angle for pressing like chest pressing and stuff, but I like it for rowing. I'd probably rather squat in a straight up and down.
Yeah.
But an overhead like behind the neck press where you're pressing backwards. Slightly backwards. Front squats is pretty good as long as it's pushing into you. But a straight up and down one works pretty good too. But you just have to make sure that when you're using a Smith machine with that angle, that you're using it the right way, I guess, depending on the exercise that you're doing. Huge pet peeve of mine, though, for Smith machines. Why do they not make them all go to the floor? I mean,
Two
more feet, or at least tall enough to be able to press over your head. The amount of the size of that track being another 2 to 3 feet is not going to substantially change the amount of material and the cost to go into the production of that machine. Why they don't do that is beyond me. Some do, obviously, but it doesn't make any sense because then you're so limited at the bottom, and all it really does is it provides laziness for people who want to do things like, you know, shrugs without having to hook them. It just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I've never understood that.
Yeah, that's a good question. I've done one thing that recently that I like with this machine, and that is if I do a reverse band squat, it's the only place I can do reverse bands in the particular gym that has this machine. They have racks, but they don't have anywhere to hook the hook bands up high. But with that rack thing, it's all one piece. So I can wrap the band around the top, bring it down around the bar, and that whole rack slides out with you. So there's been times where I'm like, yeah, my lower back isn't feeling great. I would like to do a reverse band, and that takes the pressure off my lower back in the hole, and I can use it for that. Plus, there's probably more stability. But I personally, man, I don't know. Because his question was, do you think that in the long run, he's going to be safer by not being stuck in that one single plane of motion that a Smith machine would do? I guess you are going to free that up, aren't you? Imagine
if what does safer mean? Is he assuming, because a lot of people are anti-Smith machine and they feel like staying in that one plane is somehow dangerous or hard on the joints.
That's what I'm thinking he's wondering. Yeah, I'm guessing that's what he's wondering.
I've never felt that way. Okay. The only time anything is ever difficult or put your joints in a vulnerable position is if you're not set up in it mechanically correct. You're not in the right position. You know, if the bar is going to come down and it's going to be, you know, it's going to push you so far forward that, you know, the bar isn't going to go, say, through your heel. If you know, the path, the track of the bar, and it's going to be, you know, 4 inches in front of the ball of your foot, then that's just not setting up correctly. So yeah. I don't know exactly. You know, if that's what he's talking about, I don't think Smith machines are bad for that. Okay. I just don't. I never have.
Fair enough, then. Let's see. This is a same person. One more. Left bicep strain makes it uncomfortable to hold anything more than 275 pounds for RDLs. I usually use 275 to 345. For sets of 8 to 15. Any good substitutions for hamstrings, as I have always done seated leg curls and RDLs on leg day with great results? Thanks, guys. I like this question.
I don't know how good his hamstrings are to begin with. I mean, some people benefit from RDLs considerably and stiff-legged deadlifts, and then there are other people with great hamstrings who predominantly do, you know, versions or variations of leg curls, and then the way they squat activates and you know, keeps a lot of hamstring involvement depending on what their quad movements are. So, I mean, if, you know, depending on the angle of your leg presses, you know, your foot position, how much you squat, whether you squat in a Smith machine, you know, V squats.
What's a V squat? I've heard that term before.
Excuse me. V squat is a, how do I explain it? It's kind of like a hack squat that goes like this. Like it kind of goes in around like an arch type thing. And you can also face into it.
Oh,
and
squat
with your face into the pad.
Yeah. Yeah. So, those are cool. I like those.
Yeah. And if you get a good one, because sometimes, you know, I'll see people's face planted into a pad and I'm like, it really wasn't made for that. And then there are others like Atlantis, like the one at, you know, Armbrust that actually is made for that. And it can be like pretty beneficial.
Over your shoulders while you're leaning into it, kind of. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You almost feel like you're leaning into a hack squat. And then sometimes the platform is rounded. Sometimes the platform is flat. Sometimes you can adjust the platform. You know, that sort of thing. So I think it just depends a lot on foot placement and what your other movements are for quads, because I don't, and partly because of my back injuries, but even before I had back injuries, I wasn't huge on stiff legs for, and, you know, things like that for hamstring development anyway. And I know you know, there are people, I'm not saying that they don't work. I'm not saying that they're not good. I just see them more of a lower back erector movement. And, you know, this is a lot of preferences, is, you know, can start a shit storm of arguments. You know, we did the deadlift thing
Yeah.
before, you know, everyone's so opinionated and they're so right and they're such an expert. And yet I'm going to sit here and be like, this is just my opinion. I'm not going to fucking argue it.
Yeah.
And if you disagree, then you disagree and that's fine. But I'm speaking from my own training. I'm not huge on them. I'm not big on things that aren't. I believe that a lot of hamstring work should basically be full range of motion. And I don't see that. I see the erectors as a prime mover. Mm. I just do.
So I like that you're working it from the other end versus, you know, hamstring curl, you're working it from, you know, by the hinge, the leg down at the bottom versus this way, you're kind of going from like the other end of the muscle down, if that makes sense. But I could see that. I could see that for sure. I mean, I like them, but it's also in where I use them. I had something I wanted to add, Skip. That was, what about where he uses them in the workout? So if he's moving up to whatever he said, like 375, 345 pounds, is he doing this at the start of a workout? Because I bet you that if he is, and then he were to say, do, you know, three other exercises first and then finish with these, he couldn't lift nearly as much. So my thought is, if I'm in a position where I want to limit how much weight I'm using with something, like I'm really strong with shoulder press. When I got really strong, I mean, I used to back in the day, and I'm sure you can relate to this. I got to the point where I was like, my ego got to me and I was like, yeah, you know, I got to the point, man, where I could do the 130 pound dumbbells for sets, like for 10 reps for sets. And I was like, that was my jam. That was my lift, you know? And so what do you think my shoulder workout looked like? I came in there. I did as little as I possibly could before I got those 130 pounds in my hands. You know what I mean? Because yeah, exactly. I wanted to like look as badass as I could, get as much out of them as I could. But nowadays, I'm going to do everything else before I get to shoulder presses. And now I can only handle a fraction of that, you know?
Yeah.
But the strength that it, you know, or the development I can get from it is just as good, if not better, because I'm not risking, you know, breaking my wrist if that thing turns sideways or something on me. So I wonder if you were to say, get better control over the weight too. Because if you do like a really slow negative on a stiff leg deadlift, I challenge a guy to use more than like an 80 pound dumbbell. Really slow, 3 second negative with a stretch down at the bottom and then a hard drive up, man. That's going to be brutal. You know, I'd say my thought would be focus on getting more out of the weight versus trying to find a way to use the most amount of weight possible, you know?
There's a couple of things that I've seen when it comes to this argument with stiff legs and RDL, things like that. I personally haven't seen, and if anybody knows of anybody, send me the before and afters. I'd be happy to hear. I don't see that this makes a huge or dramatic difference in hamstring development.
Okay.
I just don't. And I think that you take a huge, huge risk, massive, tenfold, 20-fold. When you start throwing around these ridiculous weights and people just don't have, it's not like I go, oh man, your hamstrings are fucking badass. So that makes total sense. I'm looking going, I'm waiting for one to break like a rubber band. I'm like, your fucking legs are already shaking.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm just not sure this is a grand idea here, you know? I'm just thinking I'll take a fucking thick rubber band or a resistance band and I'll put, you know, 400 pounds on one end and I'll just keep stretching until it fucking breaks. It just makes me nervous when I see things like that. And yeah. I have not seen the development that says they are that. Now you can show me somebody like Dusty who's moving ridiculous poundages, but I want to put Dusty in the exception to the rule category because there are not other humans on this planet that can row and dead as frequently as he does and pull that kind of fucking weight.
Yeah.
Now, someone may say, well, Skip, it's because he's been pulling that shit all the time. It may well be. You could take 100 people and start them where Dusty started and they wouldn't end up with 20% of that.
Right.
He's just a different animal, and clearly it's working for him. I would never tell him you're fucking doing it wrong, Dusty. But I'm saying for the rest of us mere mortals, I don't see this ridiculous hamstring development coming from stiff legs. And I've used them for a long time when I was younger, and I still didn't I still didn't see it. I think that your foot position on squats and angle leg presses and things of that nature, even honestly, walking lunges and stuff like that, I think are huge too. I'm not saying there's not development there. All I'm saying is I don't see that it's so dramatic that it's worth the risk for the large majority of people.
Yeah, I could see that. And my thought to back you up is what I was saying before, that to figure out how to use less, get more out of less, find safety, you know, be safe. You know,
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, man, if you're stressing your bicep, then it tells me, like, use less weight, figure out a way to work around it. I feel like that's just part of it, is just working smarter. Man, I can tell you that doing like a slow, and I'm not talking a three count, but like a 3 second negative on like a leg press with a pause at the bottom. If you do a negative that's going 1 1,000, 2 1,000, 3 1,000, then you hit the bottom. When you hit the bottom count, 1 1,000, then drive. And then 1 1,000, 2 1,000, 3 1,000, hit the bottom. 1 1,000, drive. If you use that kind of control, your hamstrings, you require so much of your leg. You know, if you're pressing from the heels, your hamstrings are going to take so much of the load through that negative. You're going to get so much out of it. And I feel like if you're to do that first, if you're to do leg curls first, if you're to do, maybe you're working on some glutes, you know, you work a glute exercise in there too. Before you get to the stiff legs, then at that point, you're not going to be able to handle the same amount of weight that you did before.
No, and I completely agree. I think that from a bodybuilding standpoint, that's how it should be. I don't think anybody should pull. If you're putting deads into your back workout, which most sane people do, I don't think doing them first is from a bodybuilding standpoint, you're doing yourself justice, because everything that follows those deads is going to be exhausted. And tell me, how are you going to row after that? How are you going to row at maximum capacity through these full range of motion where you need full stretch, full contraction type of exercises, whether it be chins or, you know, hammer, anything, pull downs, rows. It's such a massive compound exercise involving the entire body that why wouldn't you finish with it to take that almost like a pre-exhaust or pre-fatigue that much further and minimize the risk of injury by minimizing the amount of weight needed to arrive at basically the same end result, in the sense that everything is fatigued at that point. The only argument against it, my opinion, is if you're pulling deads and your stabilizers are really fatigued, you could open yourself up if you don't know what you're doing and your form is not dead on and it's not impeccable and you don't know when to quit, then you probably could fuck yourself up. But every rep, the first rep should look like the last rep. Whether you fail or not, every repetition should look the same in every set that you do. So it doesn't matter if it's the first or the 16th. It shouldn't look any different. Tempo, nothing.
Yeah.
They should all look the same.
Man, that's a great challenge to put on yourself. I remember Ron Partlow calls those robot reps.
Uh-huh.
He just tells himself like a robot would do, you know, 100%. If you can keep that kind of control, man, you know, you're doing yourself a justice. Meadows, I know he likes to use, I mean, maybe not always, but I've seen him use stiff legs at the end of a leg workout for the stretch. Mm-hmm. So, you know, different components of a workout being that you may add a stretch to a workout.
Sure.
You know? And that, so that you've seen back exercise or back routines where part of the routine is maybe you're doing a hanging stretch for part of it, mm-hmm. for, you know, or like all the DC stuff has the weighted stretches, and that you can get a really nice stretch out of a stiff leg, but you don't need 350 pounds on the bar in order to get a really deep stretch. In fact, you'd probably need a lot less to be able to control that, you know?
Right.
Looking around here at what else we have, extra virgin olive oil. It seems a lot of coaches use extra virgin olive oil in clients' diets. Why don't we see whole olives recommended? Is there a difference between using olives and whole in olive oil? Is there anything more to olives besides the fat?
I don't need olives. Yeah, I mean, you're not talking about a ton of calories, but you know, you basically, all they're doing by using the oils, they're using it specifically only for the fat. So, you know, I'm not a, you know, here we go. I'm not a huge fan of using oils, substantial amount of oil for fat. If you're using some, that's fine. You know, you cook in it, you add a little bit. But when you start to add oil, too much oil, I just believe that the body doesn't necessarily or may not efficiently digest that much oil all that well. And I just always have to laugh because I'm like, I wonder if they cough and they just like a turd comes out, because it just feels like maybe, you know, like when you eat too much orange roughy and you have that discharge from your asshole.
I've never had that, but I can tell you, I got a story for you actually, but I'll let you finish saying what you're going to say.
Yeah. I'll just say that I could eat orange roughy twice a day with no problem. But if I ate it three times, it would literally leak out of my asshole. Like, you'd be like, did that happen? Go check. You're like, it did. It fucking did. Anyway, that's bad, but true.
I've heard.
Yeah. The oil, I mean, you know, you can have olives for your fat content. There's no reason that you can't. You just have to factor in, you know, the other things that are in there. And I mean, it's not high in too much. I mean, I think there's fiber and there's maybe a small amount of carbs. There's not any.
You nailed it.
Significant. Yeah.
Half cup of olives, whole olives. And I don't know, there's different olives, I'm sure. And I'm sure each one has different, you know, amounts, but we're looking at a half cup is 8 grams of fat and almost 4 grams of carbohydrate, a little bit more than 2 of those being fiber. So, you know, a couple of grams of carbs, really, it's not a big difference. You could do it. I don't see why most people couldn't use that then, you know?
That's what I mean. And it would satiate so much better because it take up more space and it's fiber. I mean, let's say we have, oil. that makes, or, a couple of olives. Oh, shit. Like, that would taste good
in the middle
of the fucking diet phase. So,
hell yeah, it would.
I don't know. I mean, it just depends. You know, I think a lot of times when people or prep guys, and I'm not knocking it, it's just a different approach than what I use. When you use things like straight oil, you're pretty fucking black and white and matter of fact. You're not crossing trace macros and not counting trace macros, things like that. You're in it specifically for the fat content.
Yep.
And, you know, I don't think there's any, you know, I don't know how it's going to satiate very well if that's the only fat. Now, if people are using that as only one of, you know, a few fat sources, but the truth is 90% of us use about 5 to 7 of the same foods every single day. And it just doesn't vary from that. Yeah. So that's where you get into messed up micronutrient profiles and deficiencies and things. If you're not, you know, if there's such a huge lack of variety in your diet, and I don't know what you're getting. I mean, you know, oil, it can't be providing, you know, any of the, and I'm not going to say that olives are, you know, that they have this massive micronutrient profile, but you can bet your ass it's better than olive oil.
Yeah. That's a good point.
You know,
that's
so,
a good point.
And I think a lot of people forget about that micronutrient issue because it doesn't directly relate to condition or muscle size. It's more along the lines of health and immune system. And, you know, a lot of us don't give a fuck. I do, but I know there was a time where I didn't give a fuck either. So,
yeah. Right. So I got a story for you. Kind of funny, kind of embarrassing, kind of makes me roll my eyes at myself even, but this is early on. And, I did my first show. And now I'm, you know, what do you do after your first show? Your next goal is to grow. And, I'm working to grow and I go to help my girlfriend compete. And I'm backstage and, you know, I'm helping her with her oil and stuff. This is back when we did our own tans. And back in the women's area, there's one other guy back there who happens to be helping a girl that he's working with. His name is Shelby Starnes.
Oh.
And I had seen Shelby before. I had met Shelby at my show even. He actually guest posted at my first show. And he had just competed and had a successful year. And, you know, he gave me a few little bits of advice that day. But one of the things was I told him, I was like, hey, Shelby, this is what I had been doing, you know, with my food. You know, what am I missing? I don't even think I said what am I missing, but I somehow asked him for advices. And he said, fats. He said, he said, look at your fats. He said, you know, your fats are low. You need a lot more. You could do a lot more fats. And then all of a sudden I realized, I'm like, huh, I've been shoved. I mean, I was so carb focused is what it came down to. You know, I had my protein because protein is what builds your muscles. And then I had my carbs and I didn't have many fats in. So I said, huh, okay. And so I started adding a little bit of fat to my shakes. And I thought to myself, okay, yeah, look at it. If I add a tablespoon of fat to my shakes, you know, I'm looking at, okay, so this is 90 calories. And wow, there's a lot of fat in here. This is a lot of calories that I'm getting. I could probably do like a quarter cup. I got to the point, Skip, where I was doing shakes with like a half a cup of olive oil in them.
Oh, my God.
And when I took a shit, if you looked in the toilet, it literally looked like somebody dumped a cup of olive oil right straight into the toilet. I... That lasted for a very short period of time, as you can imagine.
Oh, my God.
Obviously, though, it was one of those things where I overdid it. I was like, well, if you know, 2 tablespoons equals, you know, 30 grams of fat, and that's this many calories, what if I did a half a cup? That's, you know, where your brain goes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Obviously, it didn't work out the way I anticipated. But, yeah, that fat went straight through me, man. That was, I will not forget that.
Yeah, the Jay Cutler thing, that was the Orange Ruffy thing was the Jay Cutler thing.
Okay.
And he's what, you know, he's who got everybody going on Orange Ruffy. Then there was a time where that people were eating so much Orange Ruffy that it became, I believe, an endangered species or a species that they at least weren't selling because the supply was getting so low. And when it did come back, I'm guessing, I don't know, 2013, 14, in there somewhere. I remember I was getting a lot of my food at Whole Foods, and I mean, Orange Ruffy tastes pretty fucking good. It's kind of oily.
I never got into it. I don't know if I've even had it once, honestly.
Yeah, I think it's pretty good. I mean, it's certainly better than tilapia. And, you know, your cod and your typical whitefish is just bone dry. It's horrible. So at least it was kind of oily. It wasn't oily like a sea bass. You know, a sea bass, $22 a pound is some pretty good shit.
I have not eaten that.
But it just had an oily context to it that wasn't terribly high in fat, which clearly you don't normally get.
Yeah.
So, you know, it worked out and I started eating it a couple times a day. I'm like, oh, what are they talking about? I eat 2, you know, I don't have any problem. I got up to 3 for 3 or 4 days. And I'm not kidding when I say I was like, oh, what the fuck was, like, something just felt like it came out of my asshole. Oh. So you go and I mean, I understand it's TMI, but it's an information show. It's basically, it's like snot. It's like runny, clear snot. Oh. You know? And then you go and you sit down and take a fucking do, and you just have a blowout of snot. And you just go, how did that not come out when I was walking? Or I'm sure glad I didn't try to fart. Can you imagine? So it took a couple days. Once you get to that point and it kind of overpowers your GI, you need a couple days because it doesn't stop right away.
Oh, shit.
So I'm like, okay, I'll stay at 2. I'm not going to go to 3.
Guys, if you're watching this on the YouTube, if you've had that happen, comment below. That's all I got to say, Skip. looking at what else we have here. Oh, yeah, this is a weird one. This is from James Hodge. He says, I have ongoing test flu. Since July, any test of any ester pinned over 150 milligrams is giving me swelling, sight pain, and flu symptoms. I've run test E, SIP, and PROPE. PROPE and SIP are less of an issue, but the E kills me. 3 different brands, one of which I've used for years, and the issue started new bottle, but the same batch. Changed all supplies, swabs, pins, same result. Changed locations. Any other compounds, Mast E, Nandrolone, Tren, Ace, they're all fine on their own. But I add in over 150 milligrams of test, I'm boned. Consider sources good and utensils fresh. Looks like I lost my camera here. Hold on a minute. Consider sources good and utensils fresh and sterilized. I'm safe and proper can be. Gratitude, play us. What's up with this, man?
I don't know. Hashtag gratitude players.
I like that. I like that.
Okay, is he, and he may not have been clear on this because I wasn't, is he doing the pro by itself? Or is it mixed in with everything else? And he only notices that he gets sick from it when he puts it in with everything else.
Shit, he doesn't say that.
Okay, then I'm going to respond both ways, okay? Because I'll say this. If he's doing it as a standalone, there could be something with the fact that, and understand this is a reach because this is not something that I've heard of before. I mean, you get, you know, test flu or you feel sick from test because basically your, you know, levels go up so quickly that it just, it makes you feel like shit and makes you sick. Anyway, when it comes to, you know, if the ester is so short that it's spiking, which it shouldn't be with probe. I mean, I could almost see it with like a suspension or something, but if he's doing it as a standalone and it spikes the shit out of his testosterone or his blood levels with testosterone, I mean, I guess I could see if that could have some impact. If he's combining the two and he only notices when he leaves it out, I find that hard. I don't know that he would know the difference. Like, he's taking other compounds, so I don't know how he would kind of narrow it down. So I'm thinking it's probably a standalone. It could also be an ester, not an ester issue, but a what it's suspended in. Because probe could be suspended in a different oil that he's having issues with and it makes him sick. That I don't know. Because, see, when it comes to tests, here's my, I don't know that he's really experiencing testosterone, like test sickness or test flu.
Right.
Because if he's got other tests in there, I mean, test when
you're gonna,
I don't understand, you know, how would you differentiate? How would you know? And how would you know that it's just the probe? It was something in there maybe making him feel nauseous when he takes it, but that's not, it's not the textbook definition of test flu. Test flu is when you start tests and you haven't been on it for a little while, you've been on nothing, and all of a sudden the spike in your blood levels makes you, basically gives you the flu. It makes you sick. Your body responds to it like, what the fuck is going on? The only time I've ever had that is with Sustanon.
Yeah.
And it's been years and years and years. And I don't know if, I mean, in hindsight, maybe it wasn't even as much the testosterone as it was the, you know, any, the oil or the vehicle, whatever it was that was, you know, the compound that was in there. I don't know, but it sounds to me more like it has something to do with the actual probe itself. So it could be, I mean, maybe it's, you know, I don't know, a different ratio of, you know, benzobenzoate, or maybe it's a BA issue. Maybe it's the actual vehicle. I know there's, you know, I don't know what they suspend in ethyl oleate or all these other different things that they're starting to use, or they're starting to come back around to using again.
Right.
Some people do not respond very well to your non-traditional, you know, oils that you suspend gear in. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know, but I know that probe would be more likely to have a different vehicle because you'd want to keep it suspended so that it didn't crash, especially if it were stronger than 100 mg per mil, because it's very hard to, I always tell people all the time, just don't even get probe higher than 100 mg per mil because it's so difficult to keep it in suspension, I think, and it just hurts that much more if you are able to keep it in suspension. But I would say that it's more of something that's in that bottle aside from the testosterone itself. That's my opinion.
Yeah,
and I don't think it's from a lack of being clean. I don't think that's the case either.
He says three different brands, though. I mean, there's something up with this. I think there is. I'm with you that there's a variable that we're not looking at. So he says it's three different tests that do this. Test E being the worst, though. And that he's used three different brands, too, of all these things.
Oh, OK. So that would lend itself more to, it could be that they're using the same, you know, the same oil that is different than what he's used to. I don't know. It's a tough one. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I really don't know either, man. It's something and it's irritating. That kind of thing is irritating.
Like to help him out on that, because I'm sure it does. It does kind of suck, but I would, if I were him, I would find out what the actual oil is or what the compound is that is suspending the gear, what that source is using, and see if it's consistent in all three of those. Because if it's not, then that's not the issue.
No, that wouldn't be it either. If it was just one test, if it's like, hey, I could run, I have all this test and, you know, all this DECA and all this trend and DECA don't screw me up, but the test does, then I would think it was something in the test. I know, dude, get this. there's a guy who goes to one of the gyms I guess you could say I go to. He's a guy I've competed with before. He said so he got rhabdo this past year and it fucked him all up. And then he started recovering, like trying to get back into the gym. It was kind of holding him back, like it screwed him up long term. And I guess he went on a cycle again and he was trying to like get his shit back together, but he kept feeling like shit and kept feeling like shit. And it was getting worse and getting worse. So finally, after doing his own research, and I talked about this with Crossland, because Crossland experienced it. He was suffering from heavy metal poisoning, but that was specifically from this batch of gear he was using. This guy's using several different batches. So that wouldn't be it. But yeah, so he tested high in arsenic specifically, which is fucked up, man.
Ooh. Yeah, I've heard, and I don't know that this is why, but he's in the UK, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I've heard UK is gear is rough.
But they get it from the same places, right?
All I'm saying is you're going to get your raws from the same places, right. But you're going to have a mix up. So whatever they're mixing up and whoever's doing it, it's apparently it's rough.
Hmm. He was saying, too, that there's some sort of shutdown happening in China. Have you heard anything about this?
No, I don't use gear.
But
that doesn't come legally from my...
Yeah, but I guess there's a shutdown. So he doesn't either, but it affects a lot of people, you know, in bodybuilding. So it's definitely fascinating if there is. But he said China's there's some stuff going on over there right now. They're changing some legislation. I don't think it'll ever totally shut down.
I hang my teeth, do I?
Not at all.
Okay.
You did. You had like a bunch of stuff in your teeth when you did that. That's why I laughed. You're good.
I ate some ass while we were on break. That's not even funny.
You want to get out of here?
That's something S2H would say.
It is. I wonder what he's doing tonight.
You know, I know what he's not doing tonight.
Yeah. Huh? Yeah. That's a good point. He's I went to this party with your wife.
Yeah, I know. Shit, right? I'm at a Christmas party.
Your wife says hi.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, all right, man. Well, before we go, tell me, what are you weighing now? We talked about this last time we tried to do a show together, but you're pushing some weight up, aren't you?
Well, I mean, once I broke the 230 mark, you know, it's kind of like that mental block, sort of. So I'm about 235. I fluctuate 234, 236. I think I'm holding it relatively well, but I also haven't trained since Saturday. I took a few days off.
Okay, right on, man.
So just to focus on other things. But I'll be back in tomorrow. Really what I'm doing is this month is kind of a train hard, but back off a little bit on the frequency so that when I get through December and come into January, that I don't have any aches and pains. I don't have any minor issues. I'm not questioning my recovery, that I'm actually fresh and ready to go. You know, I had a little bit of a knee problem that I think was basically tendonitis. I mean, tight IT band pulling my kneecap to the side a little bit. It just wasn't tracking right.
Yeah.
And it was because I was forcing my knees straight ahead on hack squats instead of letting them take a natural little bit wider groove, which I normally do anyway. And I think that's what started it. And it was deep inside my knee and it would only start to inflame or kick up once I got three or four sets in. Okay. So I've been able to get a couple workouts that are relatively light. So there's no pain and I'm going to start to push it up a little bit, but you know, a little bit of a right tricep tendon irritation. Funny though, not during tricep work, but during chest pressing work. So there's just some very little minor thing that I don't want to be sitting there in January. And considering I'm going to be in Michigan for almost 2 weeks over Christmas, I'm not going to be training hard there too. Yeah.
I didn't know we'll be there.
Yeah. We get there Christmas Eve and we'll be there until the 3rd. So I'm a little anxious about that because of course we're going back to Michigan only a few months after my wife's mom has passed. I don't know how this is going to go for her, whether it's going to be an emotional roller coaster, it's going to suck, or if it'll be nice. All the kids are coming in from Colorado, Wisconsin. Goose is coming, you know, from here with us. So we'll all be together for Christmas, which will be cool. But, you know, I don't want to have to train. I'm going to train while I'm there, but I don't want to, you know, it's not going to be balls out. And, you know, I'll be very TRT through, you know, for a couple months, and then I'll step back on the gas again. So I like where I'm at. I just I don't know. I don't know whether I'm going to do a cutting phase this next year or if I'm actually going to just continue to grow, because now that I'm continuing to grow and I've broken the 230 mark and I actually like my condition, I'm like, fuck, how far can I?
Yeah.
How far can I go? I don't know if I want to start cutting if my body is still willing to grow.
Yeah, fair enough, man.
Problem is when your old ass gets to be, you know, I'm going to turn 50 the first week of March.
Okay.
So, you know, I hate to sound old, but how many years do I have to continue to, I don't want to spend it all, you know, in off season and, you know, potentially because my weight is higher, increase health. I don't have any health markers that are concerning, yeah, but I also don't want any. So there's that too.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I just got some things to figure out over the next few weeks. And I think holidays in Michigan and stuff are a good time to think those things and mull those things over.
I got a question I want to ask you next time we do a show or sometime in the future. A topic, really. I want to ask you, for anybody who wanted to become a writer, the advice that you would give to them.
Oh, you don't want it now?
No, just think about it. I just wanted you to think about it, you know, think about it. Because I bet you got a bunch of stuff that you've thought about. The reason I thought about it is because we never talk about that topic. We never talk about your writing. I feel like we should.
Yeah. Cool with that if you want to. But yeah, I'll think on it. But we can certainly talk about it.
Cool. Guys, thanks for watching. We've had a good turnout here. We've had a bunch of people watching this whole time. From various spots, from all the various different watch parties you started. I did. I saw like 3 people at one watch party and then like 5 people at another. It's just watch parties everywhere.
Hey, as long as they're watching.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Well, for another episode of Blood, Sweat, and Gear with Skip Hill, head over to teamskip.com. And of course, you can check out his writing over at Elite FTS. I never said that at the close of the show. And of course, check out truenutrition.com, our sponsor. You can use our code ADVICES for some additional savings. Great supplements. They've recently redone their website. So if you haven't seen it, go check that out. We will see you guys soon for another episode of Blood, Sweat, and Gear. We're out of here. Thanks, Skip.